Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Comlock Center, and they can be found on the web at comlock.com. That's K-A-M-L-A-K.com. Our guest tonight is parapsychologist Lloyd Auerbach, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, any words of wisdom or deep thoughts for our listeners?
You know, I was hoping of words of wisdom from you because you know, I was about to write an article and I haven't quite worked it out myself. And it's about, you've noticed certainly that among the certified mediums of the Forever Family Foundation and also the general mediumship population, that mediums seem to refer to themselves in two different ways. Some call themselves psychic mediums, and others call themselves spiritual mediums. And even after all these years, I don't think that I ever took the time to ask, you know, the mediums, you know, how they chose, you know, that title. And I don't even know if I know what the difference is. I mean, do you? Between is there a difference, or is it just
between what the titles are? You talking
psychic medium and spiritual medium?
There is a difference, and I think there's two answers to your question too. I think some mediums feel very strongly that psychic is not a part of connecting to deceased loved ones on the other side and bringing through, and that by calling themselves a psychic when they are not going to do it would not be correct. There are mediums who do both psychic readings and medium readings, in which case they would put both together. The other way of answering it is that it's plain marketing. The general public does not, and this is again because of TV and the way things are portrayed, they don't know the difference. They think a psychic and a medium are exactly the same thing. So a medium, by not calling herself or himself a psychic medium, here we're dealing with an internet age, you know, it's not the yellow pages anymore, not that they were ever listed in yellow pages, but if you Google medium, you may get anything like a newspaper or something like that. But if you Google psychic, then they're going to come up. So if they don't use the word psychic in their title, they're losing out on a piece of marketing.
Yeah, well, listen, we know that all mediums are psychic, so
right.
It would be a bit redundant. So I agree that the reason they would say psychic mediums is because they do both types of readings. So they'll do a psychic medium, as long as it's clearly defined up front what you want, you know, and they can do that. The bigger picture, though, is, you know, in spiritual medium, you know, is what a medium does, you know, spiritual in nature. So, you know, mediums always say that they are conduits, you know, that it's not them, you know, the first to tell you, you know, they are vessels, you know, through which, you know, people no longer in the physical communicate. So in that sense, I mean, would you call a radio spiritual? You know, I mean, a radio is a receiver, you know, of information. So now, on the other hand, if you want to call them spiritual because by the very nature of what they're doing, talking to people that are in the spirit world, what we refer to as the spirit world, then I get, you know, spiritual medium. My other thought on that is that by calling somebody a spiritual medium, if they're just, you know, conveying information, that's one thing. But sometimes they will also give you insights into spirituality and or the spirit realm. But that's mainly based upon their own, you know, beliefs and experiences. You know, so I don't know that that necessarily. I mean, most of them are not channeling, you know, spiritual concepts from the other side. They're getting specific information and evidence.
Agreed. You know?
So it's something that I think I'm going to start asking, you know, mediums, especially, you know, the mediums of FFF, about, you know, why they chose the two. So maybe
I'll surprise them all at the November convention and put them all on the spot.
Yeah.
Because it's a great question. It really, really is. Because you can get into a debate over the actual definition of spirituality. And I think that's another thing that has lost its true meaning and concept in the culture in which we live.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people automatically think of mediumship, I mean, or the concept of talking with the dead as a spiritual endeavor.
But they also think of religion as a spiritual endeavor.
Yeah, and they also think of things like telepathy as, you know, something that's otherworldly and spooky and something that maybe should be feared instead of embraced because it's conditioning, you know, that's the way that we were taught, you know, to believe. You know, religion may teach that, you know, the media, you know, makes it spooky. But I never, listen, you know, we've met a lot of wonderful mediums over the years who I would consider to be wonderful human beings and very spiritual.
Absolutely.
On the other hand, I've met some that were very good at communicating evidence from the other side, but yet...
They were horrible people.
They were not nice people. You know, so that, then you think, well, how does that happen? You know, it's not. It makes me think that it has nothing to do with, you know, being a spiritual person.
I'll tell you how that. And again, this is my view. I'm not channeling information from the other side, but everybody has the capabilities of being that receiver, that antenna, that radio, whatever you want to call it. To what degree? Is dependent on genetics, how many generations before you continued to use something that was given to us when we first appeared on the earth. And so when you have this ability to do this thing and you are not, and you're using it, everybody can do it. And it kind of lost the train of thought of where we were going with this, but its basis is we have to understand that this is something we can all do and something we can all develop. However, the same way as playing a piano, only the greatest of the great, I believe, whose journey it was, whose purpose on this earth it was to become a great pianist at Carnegie Hall is going to make it to Carnegie Hall. And it's the same with the mediums. Everybody can do it, but there's only a few who have been quote-unquote chosen to walk this pathway.
All right. Well, as you mentioned, we have a wonderful guest. People may be familiar with them, maybe not. Tonight we're going to be talking with Lloyd Auerbach about something we don't ordinarily talk to him about, that's psychic dreaming. I think a lot of people are interested in all sorts of dreams. So we're going to come back, take a break, come back with Lloyd Auerbach. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Learning to Dance in the Rain, a true story about life beyond death. When 21-year-old Maya dies in a tragic car crash, her parents begin to experience profound synchronicities, prophetic dreams, guidance from mediums, and the undeniable truth that death is not the end. Lori and Brian McDermott share their story, hoping to help others find strength and inspiration to face whatever storms life may bring. Learn more about this important book at www.learningtodanceintherain.net. That's www.learningtodanceintherain.net.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Our guest this evening is Lloyd Auerbach. Our sponsor tonight is the Comlock Center, and they can be found on the web at comlock.com. Bob?
All right, I'll be honest. Lloyd Auerbach is our favorite guest. He is back.
You're saying that.
He's the director of the Office of Paranormal Investigations, and he sits on the faculty of Atlantic University. He is the creator and principal instructor of the certificate program in parapsychological studies at HCH Institute in California. He's been an adjunct professor at JFK University since 1983. In addition to his extensive experience as a parapsychologist, Lloyd is also a professor, author, lecturer, paranormal investigator, mentalist, psychic entertainer, and professional chocolatier.
I was going to say, and all-around nice guy.
Well, since 2013, he's been president of Forever Family Foundation, sits on our scientific advisory board. He's also on the scientific advisory board of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research for Human Potential, and the board of directors of the Rhine Research Center. He's authored 9 books on the paranormal, the latest publications being Psychic Dreaming and Mind Over Matter. We're going to be talking about psychic dreaming tonight. Best way to reach Lloyd, just Google him. You'll come up with a few thousand articles, interviews, TV appearances, or YouTube.com/Lloyd Auerbach. Welcome back, Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Bob and Fran.
So, as I mentioned, I wanted to focus on the psychic dreaming. I know that this is a newly revised edition of a classic that you put out a number of years back, Psychic Dreaming, Dream Working, Reincarnation, Out-of-Body Experiences, and Clairvoyance. So you're covering a lot of material. When we think of dreams, most people don't necessarily think of dreams as being psychic in nature. So, you know, are they considered to be psychic in nature?
Well, dreams in general are not, but specific types of dreams, specific instances of dreams certainly can be and certainly are. The dream state is one of the best altered states for people to have psychic experience, although probably the most common, and people do think of these as psychic dreams, are dreams that then come true, having the precognitive dreams. Those are really, in some respects, for some reason, the most common that people actually have, or at least the ones that they remember.
So, now, take this week, for example. I don't remember my dreams every night, but this week, every single day, I've had a dream, and I call them garbage dreams. I'm just rehashing things that have been on my mind, and sometimes they're uncomfortable, and I keep repeating the same thing over and over again, and I remember them when I first wake up, and then they're gone.
Right.
And then there have been other times in my life where I have had quite a number of, you know, I guess we would call them, you know, dream visitations, where I had meaningful conversations with deceased loved ones, you know, and they stay with me, and I've taken a lot from them. So I guess the way in my thinking, you tell me if I'm wrong, the garbage dreams, I think of it as my brain is generating these memories, and in these visitation dreams, maybe my brain is acting as a receiver of information.
I think, you know, the garbage dreams, what you're calling garbage dreams, what a lot of folks would call day residue dreams, where our daily stuff kind of is worked through or is rehashed in our dreams, you can actually, you know, influence that. The whole concept of sleeping on a decision kind of comes from the idea of dream incubation, going to sleep before you go to sleep, telling yourself, I need to play this out in my dream. And if you learn to remember your dreams and just do program yourself by telling yourself, I need to dream about this, I want to ask for a raise, I need to dream about how this could go, I need to ask about the best way to do it, your unconscious is going to generate that scenario for you once you've learned how to do this process. But that's still a normal dream. The visitation dreams and other psychic dreams, you know, one of the things that's interesting, when I was writing my book the first time, the first book go around, and actually since then when I've talked to people about their psychic dreams, very often there's two ways people know they had a psychic dream. One, they had a dream, they remembered it, suddenly that event is happening. So in other words, they get confirmation that they dreamed about something real that they didn't know. So whether it's in the future or even they wake up in the middle in the morning and they had a dream about something, they turn on the TV and a few minutes later something on the news that happened in the middle of the night is there. So they can see that it was something they dreamed about real time. The other reason that people might notice it's a psychic dream, frankly, is what they tell me is that dream felt different. That's the phrase I usually hear. It felt different. Or I hear it was realer than real. Or it just stuck with me in a way that other dreams don't. So those kinds of things seem to indicate something more than the average dream that we have. But a lot of it has to do with how many we remember and what we remember, because we're dreaming every night, whether we know that or not.
Well, I know that was going to be my next question. I mean, is it true? Does everybody dream every night, even though they don't remember it? Has that been proven?
Yeah, you haven't strapped everybody into a sleep lab, so we can't say with 100% accuracy that everyone in the world dreams every night, But all studies of human beings and even some animals shows that the activity that would indicate dreaming is going on in human beings every night, every single night, and in multiple sessions. So basically, we have these cycles of sleep where we go into a very deep sleep and come out and go into a deep sleep and come out. And we actually dream in all but the first cycle, the first sleep cycle. As it happens, the dreams we remember typically are the ones that have happened or were occurring right before we woke up, in that either the most recent or actually the last of the sleep cycles, or maybe you got woken up in the middle of the night, either because an animal woke you up or your spouse for some reason, or you had to get up to pee, something like that. Right. And you were in the middle of a dream or just finishing up a segment of dreams, one of those sleep cycles. So it's those kinds of things. And what we also know is that if you write them down or record them or even tell somebody out loud about them, they'll stick with you a little bit more. You'll be able to remember them better.
Yeah. It's interesting. In those three examples you just gave, I can relate to all of them. The animals and my spouse and getting up to pee.
Me too. Yeah, in fact, I was very, very annoyed with one of my cats recently. I was having a dream. Honestly, it felt real than real. I'm really hoping it's a psychic dream. That I ran into at an event, I ran into John Stewart and ended up sitting down and having a conversation with him. And my cat woke me up before the end of the conversation.
Oh.
Yeah. But it felt realer than real. So if John Stewart's out there, I want to talk to him.
Bring your cat along.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned, you know, dream research, and in the psychic dreaming book, I mean, you cited an interesting dream study that was back in 1953, in which people were woken up during the REM stage of sleep, and out of those people that were woken up, 85% of them reported, you know, dreams. So I guess REM cycle is where most of our dreams take place.
Yeah, so that's when our eyes are moving back and forth. REM stands for rapid eye movement, and it is just a physiological indicator that the activity in the brain seems to be dedicated to dreaming at that point.
Mm. Now, before you mentioned dream incubation, so I mean that must be of interest to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So there are other things. I mean, the ancients, a lot of ancient cultures had various rituals, right, and prayers,
yeah,
and so forth. And what are some things that people have done, you know, or could do? I mean, you touched on a little bit about that, but are there other things that people can do to sort of incubate like a psychic dream?
Yeah, there are. Well, first of all, dream incubation is an ancient technique. It is an ancient tradition. Of course, in many ancient cultures, and perhaps even some more recent ones, people did believe that in their dreams was when they were connecting with the gods or with higher powers. Because, of course, we didn't understand much about dreaming at that point. And we still don't. Still pieces of it we don't quite fully get today. So they would pray before they would go to sleep that they would have a message from the gods, or that they would, you know, dream about something in specific, a message, a decision, the right decision, those kinds of things. So, but the key to any sort of dream practice, I mean, any sort of dream practice, really is to learn to remember your dreams. And the simple two-step process here is, one, you have to intend to remember your dreams and tell yourself that you will remember. So part of the dream incubation process, or even while you're laying down as you're going to sleep, I will remember my dreams, I will remember my dreams. Just kind of repeating that even in your head. It doesn't have to be out loud. The second part of remembering your dreams is recording or writing them down, or at least expressing them, saying, talking about them as soon as you wake up. And many people will keep a dream journal. They'll actually wake up and start writing down whatever they remember before it fades away. But you can also, now that since we have recorders on our smartphones, or if you don't have a digital recorder otherwise, you can just speak it into that as well. Mm. That reinforces the intention to remember your dreams. So once you've done that and kind of start remembering things, you really can have that second part of the intention at the point where you're going to sleep, that I need to dream about asking for a promotion. I need to dream about what's going to happen on that date that I'm about to go on. I need to find out how to contact John Stewart. I've been trying that one myself. There are a number of things you can put in that, but you may not get to that the first night. It may come the second or third night that you're asking for that. And for the purposes of visitation, for communication, you can ask, you know, I would like to speak to my grandfather. I want my grandfather to come to me in my sleep. Now, of course, there's in that situation, it's not just your mind and your brain. It's also the grandfather. Is he willing to and is he available? Something we learn from the mediums, of course.
Right. So, lots of times when I wake up from a dream, if I'm in a good enough mood, I'll start telling Fran about the dream that I had, and sometimes as I have some difficulty in recounting it. So when we wake up from a dream and we start recalling it, do you think that our recall may be different from what we actually dreamed?
We may be filling it in. That's not an uncommon human attribute. We do tend to fill in some blanks as we're trying to remember. And one of the things that gets in the way of psychic information or psychic experience in general is the capacity to fill, to name things and fill things in. You know, for the folks who get trained in remote viewing, one of the issues right up front that you want to deal with is that you may only get partial information. You may not get the full story or the full picture. And you have to learn to be okay with that and not struggle to take that shape you saw in your mind or in your dream and identify it with a word, a place, a name, or something else. Because once you do that, it focuses your recall into that image, into that idea. So when you're recalling dreams, the best thing to do is to really do what remote viewers do, which is to say what you remember as best you can without struggling, and then go back over it and see if anything else pops up.
When we, you know, we hear all these reports from writers and scientists and musicians and artists that claim to receive, you know, inspiration from dreams, including people like Einstein and famous authors. So, in general, are creative people more psychic than non-creative people?
The research with people awake is that people who have a creative flow or creative outlet tend to be more psychic, or at least they tend to do better on ESP tests, on pretty much every type of psychic test. So whether it's an artist or a musician or even a writer, people who have an expressive creative outlet, whether it's their profession or their real true hobby or calling, they do. And part of the reason seems to be because they don't second-guess themselves. They let that creativity flow. So information can come through, so imagery can come through without having to, again, identify, quantify, logically put it in order, things like that. And whether or not creative people have more psychic dreams, I'm not so sure about that, because when we're dreaming, all the things that block us otherwise, all bets are off. I mean, the rules don't apply the same way.
Yeah. And we discussed that people, pretty much we all dream every night, so it's not like creative people are dreaming more often, but maybe the maybe the content of their dreams is different, you know.
But it may be more creative. It may be along the lines of, you know, if you're a fiction writer, I've talked to some fiction writers who have said that, you know, they got stuck. They got a little writer's block, and they went to sleep, and the next morning the story had played out in their heads in their dream. So the writer's block was gone. The creative flow was actually happening in their dreams. Yeah. Scientists actually can have creative inspiration as well. You mentioned Einstein. Well, there was Frederick Kekulé who basically came up with the molecular structure of benzene. The story is that he had a dream about a snake eating its own tail, but it was in a hexagonal shape, and he woke up realizing that that was the benzene ring. That was actually the structure of benzene, coming through as a metaphor.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, power of the metaphor and myth crosses has sustained viability throughout the centuries, right? I mean,
yeah, that's right. Yeah, you know, one of the issues about dreaming that is an issue is that the information that we have may come through in a form of a metaphor or a symbol, and when that happens, the thing you should not do is run to a dream dictionary and try to figure out what those symbols actually were from somebody else's decisions. Because I don't know, an artichoke may be different for you than for me in my dream. You know, in the dream. Certainly it's different than what I've read it is in some of these dream dictionaries. I just happen to like artichokes.
We hear a lot of people will tell you that when we dream, they believe that our consciousness, or some people will call it our soul, you know, actually leaves the body and then returns to the body when we wake up. Is there any, is that something that we can show by research? Or?
No, that, well, certainly we can't show that by research. The closest to anything there is that people do have out-of-body experiences when they're dreaming, and some of those experiences have a component that we would call bilocation, or a living apparition. So someone who is dreaming about going to visit a friend or another location, and they go to sleep, and they have this dream, and they wake up, and the next day their friend calls them and says, "Oh, good, you're okay. I thought you were a ghost. I saw you last night."
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, that's a projection. We don't really know, and in fact, some of the evidence from the best people who do astral projection or out-of-body experience in the past and the research, they would all really bristle if you said to them, "Your soul left your body." The late Alex Tanis always said, "If my soul left my body, even for a moment, I'd be dead." So we don't think that that's what's going on.
Yeah, and have you talked about and written about, you know, Alex Tanis, and you know, he actually had a was seen. He left his body, visited another location, and was seen by others. So that's quite striking. But
you
had your own experience of being seen while dreaming, as I recall. So can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that happened actually in my early days in this field. My first job out of graduate school was working at the American Society for Psychical Research. I was working in the education department as their public information person. But we had research going on about out-of-body experience. And, in fact, there's a video on YouTube. If people just pop into pop over to my YouTube channel, easiest is just to put an ASPR out-of-body or even ASPR 19-3 experiment. And you'll find that video that's about the experiment. But I got to know Alex Tanis very well and Dr. Osis, who is a research director, very well, both of them doing the research from different sides of it. Alex, as I hung around him, I even had him lecture in a couple of my adult ed classes for me. But as I hung around him, he was always asking me about whether I'd had psychic experiences and kept on telling me, kept on suggesting very strongly, "You're going to have an experience. You're going to have a bunch of experiences." Well, it's like, "Hang around with me, kid, and you'll see, you'll go places." And it was that kind of guy. He was a really, really fun guy to be around. His greatest talent, by the way, I think, was the ability to drive around Manhattan and know when a parking space would open up on the street.
Practical.
It was parking karma, we called it, yeah. So I had heard Alex's stories of bilocation. I had been involved in some of the research to some extent, although not as an experimenter, just really kind of as an observer. And I was at, I was teaching some adult ed courses at a few schools not close to my house, to my folks' house where I was living at the time, right out of grad school. There was one that was up in Bedford, New York, which was about 50 miles from where I lived at the time. And I got to know several of my students, actually. A couple of them were psychics. One of them, I really hit it off with her and her daughters. Her daughters were, one was a little younger than me, one was a little older, about the same age as me. And Danita, who was the psychic, and I had a long talks about different psychic experiences. One night, I had this dream. I woke up in the morning. I remembered the dream very vividly. It felt different. In the dream, I was in Danita's house in the middle of the night, and she and her younger daughter, her 18-year-old daughter, Linnea, were watching TV at late at night. And the two of them stayed up pretty late, probably till 3 or 4 in the morning. They were very late risers, and they watched movies all night. So in the dream that I remembered, I popped in and had a conversation with the two of them and saw the dog, and then that was it. So I didn't think much of it. It did feel different. But a couple days later, I got a call from Danita while at work. It's like, "When were you going to call me?" It's like, "Why?" She said, "Well, you were here a couple nights ago." And she said that I just popped in. They were watching TV, she and Linnea and the dog. I popped in, Thankfully, apparently, I was wearing something to sleep that night. And she described what I was wearing and talked about a conversation. She said, we knew you were asleep because you weren't at the top of your game mentally. So we told you to go back and go to sleep. And then a couple weeks later, I was at a bachelor party for a friend of mine, and we ended up back at his place with a bunch of the guys, and they ended up still starting to watch porn, which, you know, like stag films and stuff like that, and that didn't really, I don't know, sitting around watching porn with a bunch of guys didn't really thrill me that much. So I was making myself a drink in the kitchen, and I suddenly felt very dissociated. It felt like I was in a different state of mind, and I suddenly had this really weird experience of being in two places at once. I knew I was standing in Mike's kitchen, but I also was standing in Danita's living room. And she looked up from a book she was reading and said, and started asking questions like, what's going on? And I explained what was going on. And we had this conversation, and the last thing I said to her was to take notes, write this down. So when I snapped back to full awareness in Mike's place, I searched around for something to write with, took down some notes of the conversation, and then I called. We had a conversation. I talked to Danita the next day, and the first thing out of her mouth was, did you take notes? Hmm. And we compared notes, and sure enough, she wrote down pretty much what the conversation was, at least from her perspective.
Yeah, well, these are great stories, and what raises an interesting question of whether somebody that's very gifted, as Alex Tanis was in going out of body, can will another person to have the same experience. And I think the answer to that is yes, based upon what you
said. Yeah, I don't know if he willed me, but certainly, you know, one of the things we know is that when people accept that certain things are possible psychically, and especially when they meet people and really accept and believe that those other people can do it, and that other person tells you you can do it too and you will do it, it affects your belief structure, and it actually drops some of the ownership resistance that we all have. Because
right.
We actually have, in our society, we have two things. These were identified by Kenneth Batchelder, a psychologist in England who worked a lot with psychokinesis. We are resistant to witness, even witnessing and accepting that we've witnessed a psychic event, more PK than ESP. ESP is a little bit more accepted in our culture, but we're definitely inhibited from being psychic ourselves. Because let's face it, even though you, Fran, and I hang around with some people who are very gifted psychically, or should say talented, really, and it's in this, I'm in this world, the general public are afraid to talk about their experiences to other people for fear of being labeled weird or strange or something else.
Right. Absolutely. We are going to go to a break. We're talking with Lloyd Auerbach. The book is Psychic Dreaming, Dream Working, Reincarnation, Out-of-Body Experiences, and Clairvoyance. We'll be back with Lloyd with more to come. Stay with us.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Am I Psychic is a mobile app designed using statistics, science, and parapsychological protocols to test psychic ability using fun games. Each game has two unique modes. In psychokinesis mode, influence the game using mind over matter ability. In extrasensory perception mode, guess which random option will be chosen. Am I Psychic can store your results in an anonymous database used to eventually publish in academic journals. Available on the App Store and Google Play. Go to ampsychicapp.com and be a part of proving psychic phenomena to the world. Some profits will be donated to the Rhine Research Center.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's Hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, we have been talking to Lloyd Auerbach. Our sponsor is the Comlock Center, and they can be found on the web at comlock.com. We want to remind all of our listeners to check the events page on our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, for all the latest events and happenings. Coming up for free in July, we have on July 14th, from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, that's 11 to noon Pacific, our Visionary Explorers group that meets online. And our next webinar on July 25th is free to members and mental health professionals. Beth Christopherson will present Assessing and Addressing Afterlife Beliefs and Spiritual Experiences, an Introduction for Mental Health Professionals. All details and registration procedures are on the events page on our website. There are also only 6 spots left, including one for a female who would like a triple at our annual summer grief retreat in Chester, Connecticut, coming up soon on August 17th through 19th. It's a complete weekend working with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums and experienced facilitators. It is deliberately kept small and designed to transform your grief. The accommodations are private. There are no sharing of toilets and sleeping in dormitory bunk beds, and the food has been described as locally grown fabulous. Details and registration links are on our website, but you want to hurry because the early bird pricing ends this Saturday. Registration has begun for our biennial weekend in Fort Myers, Florida, this coming November 9th through 11th. Mediums Behind the Scenes. Imagine spending a weekend with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums along with noted experts like Lloyd Auerbach, to whom we are speaking tonight. And the event features frequent spirit communication, small teaching workshops, and group presentations, all designed to facilitate connections, foster your own communications with spirit, and learn about what happens after death. And following November comes December, particularly December 23rd, when we will draw five winners who will each win a reading with a Forever Family Foundation certified medium in our annual Holidays Past raffle. It's only $5 to enter. And please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, and great nonprofits. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Lloyd Auerbach. The book is Psychic Dreaming. Lloyd, we haven't really discussed, people know the term lucid dreaming, but I'm not sure that everybody knows what's meant by the term. So what is lucid dreaming?
Well, lucid means you're aware. So lucid dreaming is actually a dream in which you are awake and aware within the dream itself. You're aware you are dreaming and are conscious in that particular dream state. It is a kind of dream that people have from time to time, and some people have it more often than others. It also, in that state, allows you to take full control of the dreamscape. So you really can do pretty much almost anything. It can be used therapeutically. So if you're being chased by a monster in a dream and you become lucid all of a sudden, you turn around and ask the monster what he represents or what it represents, and because it's representing part of you or some issue in your life. So it can be used therapeutically. People have been able to, you know, live out their fantasies this way. It's almost like a form of virtual reality. It is virtual reality in the sense in which, you know, I could tell myself I'm Superman in this dream and be a superhero. Or I could even say, while I'm in this dream state, I'm going to be extremely psychic or a medium, and I'm going to have a communication with some deceased relatives. So it's a really interesting state to be in.
Is there any evidence that psi phenomena, you know, telepathy or clairvoyance and so forth, is more prevalent in a lucid dream versus a non-lucid dream?
It tends not to be prevalent in lucid dreams unless people initiate it.
Okay.
It seems to be much more spontaneous. You know, one of the issues with a lucid dream is that because you're conscious, you're kind of aware, you're yourself again in the dream, so any of those inhibitions that you had about being psychic might be there as well.
So most dreams are visual, right? We have do people talk about dreams where they said that they just heard something? I mean,
unless you're blind,
right.
Like blind people don't have visual dreams, although some blind people do have visual dreams because if they were sighted and then lost their sight.
But the other known senses come into play in dreams too. I mean,
yeah,
we have.
Of course they do. Yeah.
What about deja vu? I think you talked about it in psychic dreaming, that some people think that what deja vu really is that we're actually recalling something that we dreamed previously, and now it's sort of picked out of our subconscious, and you know, so
right.
Is that one viable explanation?
Yeah, you know, it's Vernon Nepi, who's a neuropsychiatrist and parapsychologist up in Seattle, he's probably the world's leading expert on deja vu. He wrote his doctoral dissertation on it many, many years ago. He's been researching it as part of his research for a very long time. He's now, I don't know if he's past 48 different possible explanations for a deja vu experience.
Yeah.
You know, the deja vu is, you know, the sense that you experience is something's familiar. You're walking into a situation or in a situation which is very familiar. And what happens for some of those experiences, not all of them, it's not the case that every deja vu experience you have has the same explanation. That's part of Nepi's point. Different deja vu experiences may have different explanations. And so one of them is that you have a dream about the future and you forget. because we forget most of our dreams. And suddenly you're in a situation and you get that sense of familiarity, but then it all comes rushing back to you. And if you're lucky, you even know what's going to happen next. This has happened to me on occasion. It can be a lot of fun. If the dream was about a conversation I'm having with somebody, I suddenly find myself in that conversation and the dream comes rushing back, I sometimes know what's going to be said next. And then you can really freak people out.
And that's not a psychic entertainment gimmick.
That is not a psychic entertainment. That is a bit of precognition. It was a precognitive dream. It's just that it got forgotten. The deja vu feeling was first, but it was representing that this was a dream that was about to be recalled. Yeah.
Mm. So, you know, you reminded me of something from a practical side. So somebody has a precognitive dream about a dangerous event.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you do with the info? I mean, what should people do?
Okay, so, you know, this is a dicey situation. First of all, one problem with precognitive dreams may be that there's not enough information. There's a general sense or a partial information, and this is the nature of psychic experience and psychic information, is that partial information, especially about the future, can be less than convincing to other people if you try to tell them, or can be even difficult to get across. So as an example, and it's one of the ones I've talked about in the book, in 1978 there was a computer sales guy by the name of David Booth who had a recurring dream, not a psychic at all. He had a recurring dream about a jumbo jet crashing at O'Hare after dark. Weather, it was not raining, so there was a general idea of the weather conditions. And he saw the plane actually crashing and everybody getting killed. So he also saw in several of his dreams where the problem was. In other words, what was the fault in the aircraft? So it was happening so often to him over a few week period that he called the FAA to try to get somebody to believe him and do something about it. Fortunately, he got someone in their public relations department who believed him. Because the guy actually, and I was fortunate enough to talk to this individual years later, thanks to Roy Neal of NBC News, who was a friend of the family and was kind of like my uncle in some respects. My dad worked for NBC for many years, and Roy put me in touch with this guy from the FAA. And what Jack told me was that Booth had enough detail about the inner workings of the craft and what was wrong with it that he took him seriously. But there were several issues for them to do something. They would have liked to have done something about it, but they did not know a date. They did not know the flight number or the airline. If they had any one of those three pieces of information, they would have been able to force the airline to ground the individual aircraft or ground even all their aircraft coming in on that date that were scheduled to come in on that date. The bigger problem was the fault was not an easy one to get to. It was going to take an aircraft out of circulation for 24 hours to get to it, correct it, and put it back in service. If it was an easy to correct fault, if they could have gotten to it within an hour in the short amount of time, what I was told was the FAA probably would have put out a warning or some sort of safety advisory which would have prevented this from happening. But again, because he didn't have the right information, and because the fault was deep inside the craft, there was nothing that could be done. So a plane came in and crashed, as he described. Now, the problem here is that David Booth ended up with survivor's guilt. He felt he really had done everything he could possibly have done, especially not being a professional psychic. But he felt really bad about it, and so did the guys at the FAA. But they really couldn't do anything with that information at that point. So there's only a certain amount of times that you can actually do something. On the other hand, I've had people who have written me letters or contacted me to tell me they had a dream, for example, about a friend, about going on a road trip with friends, and that they were going to get into a really bad accident. And in one instance, I know that the woman actually said she convinced her friends not to go. We don't know what would have happened because they didn't go on that road trip. We don't know if it would have happened. In another instance, the woman did not go. This other woman didn't go, but her friends did, and they got into a really bad accident. Nobody died, but they got into a really bad accident, just as she dreamed.
Yeah. As you said, Lloyd, it's dicey. What to do with that?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we reached the end of our time. Wish we had more time. We're talking with Lloyd Auerbach. The book, if you want to learn everything that you wanted to know about not only psychic dreaming, but things about psi phenomena in general and telepathy and dream working and reincarnation, OBEs and clairvoyance, pick it up, Psychic Dreaming. Thank you, Lloyd. And
Or they can come to the November convention in Fort Myers, Florida, and ask Lloyd directly and get the book signed.
Right, and we're doing some workshops on psychic dreaming.
Oh, yeah, and those are going to be cool.
Yeah. Thanks, Lloyd. Have a good evening.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Fran.
Take care.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from all participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind as we visualize the healing light upon Robin Murray, Joanne Gerber, Diane Archangel, and Marianne Pierzga. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this. To love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.